Chapter 19. Katrina washed him when he woke. Ember Janey helped her lift and turn him, his big pink-palmed hands very gentle as he handled the leg. They washed the smell of fever off him and changed the dressings. Sean watched Katrina as she worked, and every time she looked up, they smiled at each other. Once he used a little of his strength to ask Ember Janey,
"Where were you when I needed you?"
"I slept in the sun in Kutsi, like an old woman," Ember Janey half laughed, half apologized.
Katrina brought him food, and when he smelt it, he was hungry. He ate it all, and then he slept again. Ember Janey built a shelter with open sides and a roof of thatch. He sited it in the shade on the bank of the Sabi. Then he made a bed of poles and laced leather thongs. They carried Sean from the wagon, Katrina fussing around them, until they had laid him in the shelter. Katrina went back to the wagon for pillows, and when she returned, she found Thief and Sean settled down comfortably.
"Sean, get that monster out of there. Those blankets have just been washed."
Thief flattened his body and hid his head in Sean's armpit.
"It's all right. He's quite clean," Sean protected him. "He smells."
"He does not."
Sean sniffed at Thief.
"Well, not much anyway."
"You too."
She put the pillows under Sean's head and went round to his leg.
"How does it feel?"
"It's fine," said Sean. Thief inched himself up the bed until he reached the pillows. In the slow slide of days, Sean's body healed, and the well of his strength filled. The moving air under the shelter dried the scabs off his chest and leg, but there would be scars. In the mornings after breakfast, Sean held court from his couch. Katrina sat at the end of the bed, and his servants squatted around him. First they talked over domestic matters, the health of the oxen, mentioning them by name, discussing their eyes, hooves, and stomachs. There was a tear in the canvas of one wagon. The single remaining bitch was in season. Was Thief man enough for the job yet? There was meat to kill. Perhaps the Nkosi Kazi would take the rifle later today. Halubi had caught 4 baobab of medium size in his fish trap, and here the talk turned to the bush around them. A lion had killed a buffalo below the first bend in the river. There you could see the vultures. During the night a herd of cow elephant had drunk a mile upstream. Each item was considered by the meeting. Everyone felt free to comment or argue against any view which conflicted with his own. When everything had been said, Sean gave them their tasks for the day and sent them away. Then he and Katrina could be alone. From the shelter they could see the full sweep of the river, with the crocodiles lying on the white sandbars and the kingfishers plopping into the shallows. They sat close to each other, and they talked of the farm they would have. Sean would grow grapes and breed horses, and Katrina would keep chickens. By the next rainy season, they would have filled all the wagons. One more trip after that, and they would have enough to buy the farm. Katrina kept him in bed long after he was strong enough to leave it. She mothered him, and he loved it. Shamelessly, in the fashion of the male, he accepted her attentions and even exaggerated his injuries a little. Finally, but reluctantly, Katrina let him up. He stayed in camp a week more until his legs stopped wobbling. Then one evening he took his rifle and went with Ember Janey to shoot fresh meat. They went slowly, Sean favouring his leg, and he shot a young eland not far from the laager. Sean sat against Msasa tree and smoked a cheroot, while Ember Janey went back to fetch servants to carry the meat. Sean watched them butcher the carcass. There were slabs of white fat on the meat. They slung it on poles and carried it between them, two men to a pole. And when they got back to camp, Sean found Katrina in one of her inscrutable moods. When he talked to her at supper, she answered him from far away, and afterwards, by the fire, she sat detached from him. She was very lovely, and Sean was puzzled and a little resentful. At last he stood up.
"It's time for bed. I'll see you to your wagon.
You go. I'll sit a little longer."
Sean hesitated. "Is there something wrong? Have I done something wrong?"
"No," she said quickly. "No, I'm all right. You go to bed."
He kissed her cheek. "If you need me, I'll be close. Good night. Sleep sweet." He straightened up. "Come on, thief," he said. "Time for bed."
"Leave thief with me, please."
Katrina caught the skin at the back of the dog's neck and restrained him.
"Why?" "I just feel like company."
"Then I'll stay as well." Sean moved to sit down again.
"No, you go to bed."
She sounded desperate, and Sean looked hard at her. "Are you sure you're all right?"
"Yes. Please, go."
He went to his wagon and looked back at her. She was sitting very straight, holding the dog. He climbed into the wagon. The lamp was lit, and he stopped in surprise when he saw his cot. There were sheets on it, not just the rough blankets. He ran his hand over the smooth fabric. It was crisp from new ironing. He sat on the cot and pulled off his boots. He undid his shirt and threw it onto the chest. Then he lay back and looked up at the lamp.
"There's something bloody funny going on here," he said.
"Sean?"
Her voice, just outside the wagon. Sean jumped up and opened the flap.
"Can I come in?"
"Yes, of course." He gave her his hand and lifted her into the wagon. He looked at her face. She was frightened. "There is something wrong," he said.
"No, don't touch me. There's something I've got to tell you. Sit down on the cot."
Sean watched her face. He was worried.
"I thought I loved you when I came away with you. I thought we had forever to be together."
She swallowed painfully.
"Then I found you there in the grass, torn and dead. Before our life together had begun, you were dead."
Sean saw the pain come back into her eyes. She was living it again. He put out his hand to her, but she held his wrist.
"No, wait. Please let me finish. I have to explain to you. It's very important."
Sean dropped his hand, and she went on speaking quickly.
"You were dead, and I, too, was dying inside. I felt empty. There was nothing left. Nothing, just the hollowness inside and the dry, dead feeling on the outside. I touched your face and you looked at me. I prayed then, Sean, and I prayed through the days when you fought the rotting of your body."
She knelt in front of him and held him around the waist.
"Now we are alive and together again. But I know that it cannot be forever. A day more, a year if we are lucky, 20. But not forever. I see how small I've been to us. I want to be your wife."
He bent to her quickly, but she pulled away and stood up. She slipped the buttons and her clothing fell away. She loosed her hair and let it drop, shiny bright, down the whiteness of her body.
"Look at me, Sean. I want you to look at me. This and my love I can give you. Is it enough?"
There was smoothness, hollow and swell. Hair like black fire and soft light on soft skin. He saw the flush from her cheeks spread onto her breasts until they glowed, pink and shy, but proud in their perfection. He looked no further. He took her to him and covered her nakedness with his big body. She was trembling, and he put her between the sheets and gentled her with his voice until the trembling stopped. And she lay with her face pressed up under his beard into his neck.
"Show me how. I want to give everything to you. Please show me how," she whispered.
So they married each other, and their marriage was a commingling of many things. There was the softness of the wind in it, and the wanting, the way the baked earth wants the rain. There was sharp pain and swift movement like running horses, sound low as voices in the night, but glad as a greeting, joy climbing on eagle's wings, the triumphant surge and burst of wild water on a rock shore. And then there was stillness and warmth within, and the snuggling of drowsy puppies and sleep. Yet it did not end in the sleep. It went on to another seeking and finding, another union and a stranger mystery in the secret depths of her body.